if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour.
We stand for Queen,
country, and video games. BRB UK.
Worse teeth,
better accents.
Hello, and indeed, ahoy hoy, and welcome to episode 377 of BRB UK. That is this here podcast. If you meant to download something else, our apologies, but we encourage you to stick around, because hey, why not? Yeah, you're in this far, you may as well insert inappropriate simile here. I'm Dan, I'm one of your hosts. Hello, and I'm joined, as usual, by Mr. Coleman.
Hi!
Miss Timothy Hibbs.
Hello, sir.
How you doing? We missed you last week, Tim.
Yeah. I can't entirely tell you my secret mission yet, but I will come back to that hopefully next week or the week after, maybe.
You're
the
milk tray man. I've rumbled you. You are the milk tray man.
I'm very glad to be helping out with, and something I will be shouting about from the rooftops as soon as we get the go-ahead to do so, but yeah.
Well, he is the milk tray man if he's been running around the rooftops.
Yeah, exactly.
Ah, da-da-da-da-da.
But yeah, other than that, I've managed to also pick up an illness in my absence, and I currently have a cold or flu or one of those things.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Weren't you at the toy fair?
I was also at the toy fair. I don't think I got ill there.
Weren't there a bunch of cheap Chinese things at the toy fair?
Possibly, but not.
I was going to go more along the line of, why do you keep subjecting yourself to going into large rooms with lots of people? Because you get sick every time.
Well, I mean, if you can't make the jump between sickness and China at the moment, I don't really know how to help you guys. Like, come on. That was an easy one. That's kind of out there.
Brilliant.
Could accuse me of having some sort of virus thing and could have gone from there. But no, you just left that one on the wayside.
I'm not even sure Tim knows what he's on about yet.
Glad that we're back podcasting again together, guys.
Right, okay, good. Glad you're back, Tim. This is great. Already I can feel a long podcast coming. You'll notice that last week's episode was quite a bit shorter than usual.
Yes, well, you know.
Sure it's a coincidence.
Wasn't it like 45 minutes?
Mm-hmm. Anywho, 2020 is gathering steam, you'll be pleased to hear. But it's not steam we're going to talk about here, it's Blizzard. That was a link that went terribly wrong. Now everyone's back and paying attention to news and stuff. Peeps are mad at Blizzard once again.
Surprise, but it's not political this time.
No, so it turns out there's only so much polish you can apply to a 2003 graphical turd.
Oh, it's like graphical. I mean, shade thrown at 2003.
I know, right? So people were very excited, and with good reason, for the remake of Warcraft 3, the strategy game of which World of Warcraft is an offshoot. Blizzard promised amazing visuals. Actually, you know, really kind of went doubled down on this is going to be an amazing looking game. Promised all this at BlizzCon. And then it turns out, actually, it doesn't look that good, or as good as they're expecting.
If you look at the video from BlizzCon 2018, there's a few sites that have done this. IGN's the one I checked out, but they've got a side-by-side video of a section of the game, one of the game cutscenes, mixed with what was shown off in 2018. And, yeah, beside, like, the one from 2018, it's close up, nice camera shots and things. And then in 2020, it's all done far away like the original Warcraft 3. There is a big difference as well. But it's not just a visual downgrade that they're focused on here as well. There's a lot of complaints on the Blizzard subreddit on the forums as well.
Yeah, so apparently the connectivity is, you know, they're really trying to emulate the 2003 experience with network connectivity. It doesn't work so much.
Internet is not as rampant as it is now.
There's a lack of a kind of competitive games ladder and shadiness upon shadiness. Basically hidden away in the end user license agreement. You know, that long thing that you all scroll through and click OK and sign sort of way. They're apparently, if you click yes please, I'll have some of that, shove that agreement up the windpipe, you have granted Blizzard the rights to any custom games that you may make using their tools.
If I remember correctly, back in 2003, Warcraft 3 came out, and then was followed by a little mod that was called Dota.
Say what? Never heard of it.
Yeah, which is now a Valve-owned property. Is that right?
Never heard of them.
Yeah, anyway. So I'm assuming they're covering themselves from people trying to create new games out of Warcraft 3 and then selling that off on their own.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
which I can kind of see, because Dota's a big deal now.
Yeah, or I mean, I haven't, to be honest, I've got better things to do than read the end user license agreement for Warcraft 3.
So that's why Apple owns your house.
Yeah, exactly. So so I have no idea what it actually says, but it sounds shady, right? You know, look, that's the level of journalism which you're getting today. It's like, well, I heard of a thing, it's bad. So bad things are bad. To be fair, it's more watertight than Trump's legal defense at the moment. So, you know, what the hell?
That's, I don't know. It's one of those things where you can see why they'd cover themselves like that, but also at the same time, does that stifle the creativity that gave us stuff like Dota and stuff like, you know,
Dota.
But I don't know. Like, it's one of those ones where you can see the business argument for why they've decided to cover themselves in this way. I'm just not sure that's necessarily for the good of video games as a whole, basically.
If you had to make that cover into, like, describe it in terms of a condiment.
Hey?
What have they just covered themselves in?
What?
Is it peanut butter? Is it jam? Is it tomato ketchup? Is it dog poo?
Is it in any way related to what we were talking about?
You just said cover, and I just had an image of Blizzard employees just covering themselves
cover
in...
Cover is a pretty standard word in the English language, Dan. It shouldn't trigger you into weird, tangentially related...
I've had a long, very unamusing day, and anything that will give me a chuckle, I'm just going to grab onto, mate, all right? Carry on.
I'm going to go to Slough. I'm going to grab you, and I'm going to go to... I'm going to eventually grab you. I'm going to bash your heads together.
You've got to pluck up the courage to come to Slough first.
That is true.
Yes. So, Atari. Remember them?
Yes. Let's talk about Atari.
Atari. Not satisfied with, you know, creating a retro console.
Speaking of flogging a dead horse, basically.
Yeah, flogging it. Yeah, not satisfied with flogging a dead horse that is their VCS remake, which no one's quite sure exactly what it is or indeed why it exists in the first place, but quite like the wood panelling. Atari thought, what the heck, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. Let's make an Atari-themed hotel as well.
I have a question.
Yes.
I have many.
Other than the probably most obvious question, which is why?
Mm-hmm.
Which Atari is this? Is this Atari that owns the logo rights or Atari that owns the game rights?
Yeah.
Good.
And I think, do you know what? I think there's actually a third company that owns a bit of Atari as well. So,
to be fair, loads of people own lots of Atari, I think.
Atari is probably the biggest mess of a company that, you know, I grew up on. And, you know, I watch the WWE, so it's quite impressive. But yeah, they're going to build a hotel in Phoenix, Arizona.
Why not? Land's cheap.
As you
it's
do.
It's going to be the most amazing wood-paneled hotel you've ever seen.
Yeah, I was going to say, I just hope it is all just wood-paneled. And like all the light switches are like the original VCS. Like it's like a 70s time capsule. That's what I really want.
Yeah, if it's a 70s themed hotel, then this could be good.
And we're not talking like rich deep mahogany. We're talking like thin bits of MDF with plastic wood effects.
I'm talking council house lino is what I'm talking.
Yeah.
That's the kind of grade we're going for. Butlin's grade. But you know, when I hear the word Atari, do you know what I associate with that brand?
Speaker hat.
Well, that's one thing, but also the latest VR and AR games.
Eh?
So their plans on the hotel include, quote, the latest VR and AR games, which they may have pronounced VR and R games, as well as state-of-the-art venues and studios to accommodate esports events.
Right, of course. Yeah, that's naturally what I think of when I think of Atari.
Function room for esports, that does make sense.
Yeah!
But why is Atari doing it?
I don't even know.
Yeah, the concept art looks interesting, I guess. It's like a big black hotel with neon red wraparounds of the Atari logo.
Nice.
So maybe it is the company that owns the Atari name and logo rather than the Atari games.
I also like the fact that they're not just planning one hotel. Like, they've got this hotel planned, and then they're going to do a load of other ones. So it's like, really? Yeah?
I don't know how up to date on your Atari classics you are, but we need themed rooms.
I want the Jaguar room where there's 5,000 buttons just for every simple function.
Oh, no. You don't get a Jaguar room. You get a... every room comes with a toilet that looks like an Atari Jaguar.
I also... Jaguar, surely, by the way.
Jaguar.
No, Jaguar.
Jaguar.
And I want, like... all.
Jaguar.
I want... it's not Chamois.
Jaguar.
I also want, you know, Atari Lynx themed like remote controls, so the battery life lasts 3 seconds, for example, and you've got to put new ones in. That'd be good.
I want because you know when you go to, you book into a hotel and they've got a crap remote controller for your television. I want them to have that, but to be like Atari controls, but the Atari wireless controls that had the big essentially radio antenna that would come out and it never worked.
Go the other way with that. Everything is remote control, like curtains, everything, yeah? But it's all a singular wired remote control that you need to find and then use to do whatever it does, remote controlling.
I mean, I'm knocking it, but I'd quite happily stay in a missile command room.
Yeah.
I think we've talked all ourselves into it.
Now, if the Atari Hotel had to be a condiment, Tim, what kind of condiment would it be?
An old brown one, Daddy's, maybe?
You know, when you upgrade your hotel package and, you know, you get access to the spa or the gym, or maybe you go to the tennis court and you see two lines going boop, 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 boop.
If they did, like, real-life reenactments of, like, combat and stuff like that, you could do for an afternoon.
Tempest.
Oh, and maybe there's a room in the basement that is just decorated with E.T. cartridges.
That would just be a terrible, like, badly... drawn room with a really badly drawn ET in it, and that's it, basically.
No, yeah. It's that's where the furnace is, and they're just shoveling old ET cartridges to heat the hotel.
But apparently, we're going to have to wait a little while for the joy that is the Atari Hotel. There's no, I was going to say release date, which is clearly not the...
For a hotel.
For a hotel. The opening date has not been announced, but apparently it's going to take at least 18 to 24 months to complete. Or if the time scale for their current console that are trying to get released could be, you know, like 52, 68, 72 months. God knows when it's going to happen. It's vaporware. It's vaporware the hotel, I think, is how I'd describe it. So,
I mean, if the new console that we're waiting for Atari is anything to go by, it's going to get pushed back a lot.
So... points of interest this week are a bit of a funny one.
They're a bit all over the place.
They are a bit all over the place.
But I have points, and I can interest you with them.
Yeah, I think there's one point we need to respectfully doff our hats towards. And as I'm sure you all know, Kobe Bryant passed away this week in a kind of what sounds like a freak accident in a helicopter. Daughter lost her life as well. It's all terribly, terribly sad. And of course, Kobe was kind of a real cornerstone of basketball.
One thing to add to that, to put a bit of context on it as well. Like, I truly think that especially the superstars of any American sport almost transcend the sport, especially in America kind of thing, in terms of their superstardom and how far their reach goes in society and stuff like that. So I think for Americans, this is... It's something that's a bit bigger than a sports star dying over here almost. I don't need to belittle our sports stars. I'm more of a football fan myself. I'm less of a basketball fan. But I think for American culture, this hits a bit harder than it does over here a little bit. And especially something where he's recently retired and his daughter was involved as well and everything. It's just, yeah, such a big tragedy. Sorry to interrupt you there, Dan, but I just thought that was a worthy piece of context to add to things as well, basically.
Just to kind of put the name out there as well, I don't know very much about basketball at all. I don't follow basketball, I don't follow teams or players and stuff, but even I know who Kobe Bryant is.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I mean, he's just, you know, a world star almost kind of thing, but yeah, especially in American culture, it's kind of a bit more of a shock to the system, I think.
I mean, would you say kind of in America he's like the same level as, say, David Beckham in terms of kind of iconic status? Because I think...
Yes.
Kind of David Beckham's probably the only equivalent we have, yes, aside from, you know, Patrick Barry, who was the Tiddlywinks world champion.
Jesus. Mm.
Well, you would say there might have been historical equivalents, but I think, yeah, David Beckham's the only real modern day example I can think of that would get to that kind of level. As you say, like, David Beckham is someone that people outside football are well aware of and well aware of him as a person and some things about him and his family and all that type of stuff. And, you know, that's the way that, yeah, Kobe Bryant would have been to most of America, even beyond fans of basketball and beyond fans of, you know, the LA Lakers where he played and stuff. It's something where, yeah, as I said, that would transcend more across society than it does here. Other than you say, like an example of someone like, if it was someone like David Beckham passing away kind of thing. It's such a massive shock and tragedy out of nowhere, but obviously our hearts go out to everyone mm-hmm. involved and, you know, anyone touched by it, family and friends, obviously. But then also just, you know, all the fans that were obviously sad to see him go. And it's a very emotional week for Americans, I think, as well. But yeah, but just our hearts go out to you guys, and we're sorry to see, you know, a legend kind of just blink out of existence like that, basically.
And where that kind of ties into video games this week is the NBA 2K20, which, you know, it's been up and down in the fans' point of view. There's some shady stuff in that game in regards to microtransactions and glitches and what have you. But they've actually done something decent where they've put up a little memorial to Kobe Bryant. So as you boot up the game now, before the menu pops up, it comes up with a simple black and white photo of Kobe Bryant with his name and the years of his life, 1978 to 2020.
I mean, genuinely gone too soon. And it sounded like he was really just getting momentum behind his kind of post-basketball pro career. I know he was starting to kind of build a media empire around himself and, you know, was a very generous guy in terms of kind of charitable donations and widening participation to all manner of things across modern life. So terribly sad.
How about a more happier note? A happier note,
coronavirus.
Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about the coronavirus.
Okay.
I have to say, this gave me a proper chuckle this week.
I don't think you should be laughing at viruses, Dan.
No, I shouldn't laugh at viruses. You are right, because they can't laugh back. But I just thought this was quite possibly the worst timing for a sale item ever. So, surprise, surprise. But, you know, Steam loves doing a sale. For any reason it can think of, it loves doing so. And it wants to do a sale for the Chinese New Year, which is great. Year of the Rat. But featured front and centre of this sale was Plague Incorporated, the game where you play the role of a virus and you're mutating to infect as many people as you can across the globe. Which was just like, oh, seriously, for Chinese New Year, amazing.
That sale has now finished.
Yes, that sale has now finished.
But the Plague Inc. sale is still going on.
Indeed, but because obviously there's been a lot of interest around the game because, well, essentially it's a gamified version of well-accepted models of infectious disease transmission. I've actually had an email conversation with the guy from Endemic because I was trying to get permission to use Plague Inc. in a lecture I was giving about kind of viral transmission and outbreaks and, you know, what effect different things have. But I mean, it's obviously a game, it's gamified.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's good that people are learning, I suppose, using it as an educational tool to work out, you know, what kind of things help viruses spread. But at the end of the day, the best thing you can do is wash your hands.
Oh.
Stay at home if you're ill.
Oh.
Don't lick strangers.
Oh.
I know, oh, Colin. No. That is your favourite thing to do as well, isn't it?
Not day goes by.
What condiment has your favourite stranger tasted like?
Mustard.
What is your condiment obsession this week?
I'm determined to get at least one of these callbacks working.
No, I was just going to say, there's a pretty decent version of Plague Inc. that's also a card game, I believe. A card game, board game, not sure, but one of the two. But yeah, it's decent.
The thing with the little Petri dishes and that.
Yes. I think that's a version of Pandemic.
Oh, okay, I like that one.
The Plague Inc. one. But yeah, anyway, yeah, that's good as well. But yeah, and Pandemic's the opposite, where you're actually trying to cure the disease as well, which might be the better thing to go for at the moment, possibly, but who knows.
But it's nice, but to just give them their props, obviously Endemic are UK-based, so it's great to see, you know, a UK-based games company doing so. Well, even if, you know, the circumstances aren't, you know, that happy and rosy, but they are, do seem quite keen on using it as an opportunity to help educate people about how viruses propagate and things that can be done. And they have gone, they've been very good and proactively posted advice, you know, kind of a comment on coronavirus and giving their game a little bit of context. And that, you know, look, the reason we're popular at the moment, obviously people are interested in these things, but please don't use us as an actual simulation of what you would expect to see of the coronavirus.
For that, you should always tweet at Cap'n Average and ask him all the information you need about viruses.
Hey, so, you know, if you're lucky, you may have picked the one day of the year I actually check Twitter.
Join the Big Red Barrel Discord and spam Dan with emails about viruses.
Yes, please. Love them.
And if you've got an unsightly rash or something you need looking at, maybe take a photo and send him that.
Oh, yeah. Make sure you do at everyone if you've done that.
It's fine. I don't need that.
No, at everyone. You need to do that at everyone. So, because, you know, you might need a second opinion.
We're going to make these points of interest a little bit more pointier.
Okay. Point like pointy like a big sword?
There may be. Like an oversized sword, or maybe the pointy blonde hair upon Cloud's head. Because Final Fantasy VII Remake, that is back in the news, and that's because where Square Enix have done their delay, they have basically put on their Facebook page that if you have pre-ordered the game directly through Square Enix, or that's the regular game or the collector's edition of the game with the big statue and stuff, you may want to go back and check your order because they may have cancelled it.
Wait. Why?
Some new policy that they've instituted around the time where the delay has happened, so it goes through the system and goes, cancel these pre-orders because of the delay. But anyway.
It's just like Indie Ref 2 in Scotland.
Exactly.
Brilliant.
So some new policy has created weirdness with pre-orders. So you've got to check your emails and stuff, see if they've emailed you to say that your order's been cancelled, and then go sort it out. So, yeah. And lastly, we're going to end on a rumor this week. There is a potential that Konami are getting their thumb out of their bottoms and going to look at releasing two new Silent Hill games. So
really?
This is a story from Eurogamer, where they cited a Twitter user called Aesthetic Gamer. This is a guy who has leaked correctly a lot of Capcom titles in the past and now seems to be turning his attention over to Konami. And he said that supposedly Konami have gone out to developers and asked for pitches, and the two games they're looking at for Silent Hill will be episodic experiences like Telltale games in the past, and then another one being a more focused type Silent Hill game that's updated to the modern kind of climate of horror games, a bit like the soft reboot of Resident Evil 7. So, yeah, possibly new Silent Hill games.
Should also point out as a very quick one, though, but just before we started recording the show, it was announced that Outer Worlds is coming to Switch in March. March the
6th. Oh, interesting.
$49.99, but yeah.
Included in your Xbox Game Pass.
For your Switch.
When Xbox Game Pass might be coming to the Switch in future.
Well, I mean, it's a corking game. It's a corking game.
It's a great
game. Quite sure how well that would work on the Switch.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see how the menus and stuff are translated for being on the smaller screen and stuff, but
God, Tim's mentioned menus.
But I think it's worth mentioning, as we're talking about Outer World, that in the games what we done play, Tim's been playing Journey to the Savage Planet, which has just come out, and it's got some beats of that similar game.
Yes, I'm really tempted to pick this up. Really very tempted.
I've been umming and ahhing over this 3 times today.
Are our points done with it being interested, by the way?
Yeah, sorry. Games what we'd unplayed. Let's go.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah, so we're in there now. We're deep in enemy territory.
All right, Tim.
Journey to the Savage Planet. Right. Basically, both go pick it up.
All right, okay. All right, Tim. See you later, mate.
Do it.
That's Journey to the Savage Planet.
Especially as I haven't messed around with the co-op at all yet, but there is online co-op, so I suggest you both play it on the PS4 so we can all play together.
I
want to play on PC as well. It's all right, me and Cole want to play together.
Well, I think you have to get it from the Epic Game Store, so I don't know how that wangles with you, but hey.
That's all right, let's see how much it is.
So, Journey to the Savage Planet, you are tasked with going out and checking over a planet to make sure its compatibility for possible human habitation in the future, basically. So you're sent to what's supposed to be a planet where there's no sentient life and there's just some creatures, and you've got to go and catalogue all the creatures and report back to see how suitable it is for possible humans to come and colonize it and stuff. So you're sent there with a ship that just has enough fuel to get you to the destination of where you're going. It basically all takes place on one planet, and you're searching through various biomes. But you can teleport between yourself and your ship, or you can just like walk back and get onto your ship.
And that is for chumps. You want to be doing the teleporting.
Well, generally speaking, a lot of the time, especially at first, you will be dying and reappearing on your ship.
Right, okay.
There's a whole like cloning thing. It's all very good-humoured. I think it refers to you as the fourth best colonising company in the universe and all this type of thing. Literally, as I said, they sent you with just enough fuel to get you there. You've then got to find fuel to get you around and stuff like that, basically. It's a really interesting game. It's kind of... It sets up like... And a lot of the screenshots may make it appear like it's a first-person shooter, and you do have a gun in one hand and various other...
And are viewing things from a first-person perspective. You can see how people get confused.
Well, also, you get various kind of gadgets in your left hand that you can get access to. I say gadgets, but a lot of them are kind of harvested from the forest and the nature of that. And I don't want to go through a few spoilers, because a few things are like related to what you find and stuff like that, and I generally don't want to spoil it for you two or anyone else that's going to go and discover things. But the ecosystems and the way you interact with the planet is much more kind of, okay, what do I need to do with this creature to get me further in the level? Or what do I need to set off as a chain reaction so I can get through this treacherous area and stuff like that? And it's literally the ecosystems themselves are almost combustible in a way that you can set off a chain reaction with them and kind of go, right, okay, I need to kill that one so he blows up that, and that blows up that, and they all die, and so I can run up there and jump up there, basically.
There's got a puzzle element to it in some ways, how you manipulate the environment.
And in interesting ways. Like in a simple version of that mechanic that you've possibly already seen and I saw when I was playing the demo, so I don't think it's too spoilerific to do, but there's one little pufferball creature type thing that generally everyone used to have various different versions of. But if you kick one of those into a kind of meat grindery thing, it opens up the tentacles that were blocking a doorway for you.
Okay.
So you've got to like feed one of the things in the environment to this door to get through the door, basically. But yeah, like there's more kind of interesting interactions between the environment, and you get to a bit and you're like, they all keep on spawning and they keep on coming back, and how am I going to get through that? Okay, I just need to create carnage and run away from it, basically.
So basically, I could try and figure this out, or that.
But often that's kind of the solution of, all right, kick this there, set that off there, shoot that one there, shoot that one a lot so he definitely dies, and then I'm running over here so I can jump up here and do that. And there's a kind of Metroidvania element to it in terms of the equipment that you get gives you access to things that you couldn't jump over or get past before and stuff. So yeah, it kind of opens up new paths and new ways around the environment. And to start with, you're very much constricted to coming out of the ship and going the same way every time. But then you get to different checkpoints and you can go from various different places. And yeah, it's very colourful, very vibrant, humorous, and has me laughing like the whole time. I kind of think this is one of the things where, and I don't say this too disparagingly, but it's an excellent like mid-tier game. I wouldn't go in expecting a full, you know, £60 AAA experience. But if you tailor it to what it is, and that's why I was saying the price comes into the factor a little bit, but then it's really good for what it is at the size of what it is and what it does. And I really enjoy it and have fun playing it, basically.
Because when I've seen the screenshots, I've kind of... What comes to my mind, rightly or wrongly, is this looks like how we thought every single planet in No Man's Sky would look.
That's a fair assessment.
Kind of use of secondary colours and a bit quirky and a little bit... kind of janky is the wrong word, but a bit kind of zany in its design.
But it feels like a very... And I don't say it like... Obviously, they've made vast improvements throughout the history of No Man's... or throughout the lifetime of No Man's Sky so far. But generally, I think this looks like a really polished single planet and just doing something really special on that planet. And there's a big kind of mystery because there is a sentient life or signs of sentient life on the planet, and you're kind of tasked with then going out and finding out what's going on with them as well, basically. And yeah, like the overarching story is interesting me. Like the general minute-to-minute gameplay is just fun and hectic and stuff. It can be a bit easy to get lost because for want of trying, I don't think there's a general map you can go to. You just have to learn your way around the environment, and you can teleport between the different checkpoints, but you kind of just have to learn your way around from other places from there, basically. And even those checkpoints you have to initially unlock and find them on the map. But there are some things it makes kind of clear, but it's not always clear as the path you need to get to them, basically. But yeah, like I said, I think it's an interesting game. It does have elements of No Man's Sky, and it is almost like No Man's Sky without the flight and without so much of the mining. You're just finding resources and doing other things. The boss battles have been a bit hit and miss so far. Like they haven't been great, but the actual just general gameplay and getting around the environment and stuff. And there is quite a bit of platforming in it for my general tastes, but I've been actually enjoying the way they've done the platforming and how that works and going about and stuff. And yeah, I generally enjoy wandering around the environment, finding a new bit of the environment and figuring my way through it, basically. So yeah, like it's, as I said, there's also a co-op element, which I was playing this prior to release, so that wasn't really available to play with. But that's something, as I said, if you guys pick it up, I'd be interested to jump in with you guys and play a bit more, basically.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I enjoyed what I played in preview, so I'm really looking forward to having a go at this one. I do like them squishy little bird things with the big eyes, because
yes,
they look funny.
They're the puffer bird things, whatever they are, but they're generally everywhere. There's different versions. And like, there's a creature that every time I don't want to spoil it, but every time I kind of interact with it via trying to shoot it, it makes me laugh my head off. Like, literally every time. I haven't encountered it in the game without literally laughing out loud when I'm trying to shoot the thing. But it screams.
Oh, okay.
It sounds like it's, like, literally screaming. It's this tiny little creature, and it screams its head off and just runs away from you. And I don't catch many of them because I'm laughing too.
I saw one of those in preview as well, yes.
If this game was a condiment, which one would it be?
A fiery pepper thing sauce.
A fiery pepper thing sauce. Right, lovely. Good, go, we cleared that up.
This is basically Dan went, I can hear in Coleman's voice that he doesn't like this condiment joke the first time, so he's going to cut it out. Therefore, I'm going to do it in every section, so he has no choice but to keep it in.
Therefore, I'm going to pepper it throughout the whole episode, so it won't be possible.
Ah, pepper it. Nice, Tim. Nice. Although that's technically more of a seasoning.
Journey to the Savage Planet on the PlayStation 4 is $24.99, but if you get it on the Epic Game Store, it's £2. No, it's
$23.99. Yeah, but seriously, at that price, it's a really fun game just to mess around with. And as I said, it's not massively the deepest, but it's just really enjoyable and fun. And it kind of reminds me of No Man's Sky and Outer Worlds and two games that I've enjoyed. But I actually think the comedy's hitting me harder in this game than it did in either of those. So
yeah. Although, look, just having a quick flick at Metacritic for it, I would say that it's divided opinion, this game. So if it were like a condiment, perhaps Marmite is the one.
You have some weird condiments in your house, but anyway,
Marmite's not weird. I'll show you what's weird: people combining Marmite and peanut butter.
I love Marmite and peanut butter.
It's weird. It would be a weird condiment to find on a dinner table, but anyway. But yeah, look, getting back to the point, Journey to the Savage Planet, like, I can see why it divides opinion, and as I said, it's not, like, super polished in some elements, even though it looks really nice and plays reasonably well. There's still some slight jank to it, but not that I massively hold against it. I think a lot of it will be, if the comedy lands with you, then I think you'll get on very well with the game.
Hang on, did you just say comedy lands?
Comedy lands.
If the comedy lands with you.
Okay, I thought you were...
Lands with you, then... So, like, check out a trailer. If it makes you laugh, then you should probably pick up the game, basically. Because, as I said, I've just been having a lot of fun with it, and it's, yeah, an enjoyable thing to mess around with, basically.
Do you know what I've just found on the Epic Store as well that's free for a limited time? Farming Simulator 2019.
Oh, is that today?
Yes.
All right, just add that into
my basket.
Do you
know what? I think we might need to get that and do a stream.
Combine combat.
Make it. That is a deal. Lovely. Right, anyway, Tim, you've got plenty more to talk about, Tim.
Yes, yes. So what would you guys like to hear about next?
Whatever's quickest.
I reckon Toy Fair is the one you're probably going to go on longest about, and the other one you can probably trim off a bit. So,
Well, Toy Fair, I won't go over everything. Previous years. And
I'd like to mention something about Toy Fair, because I looked at your photos you put up on...
I was going to say, if people want to see the photos, they can look at my Instagram, which is basically at Tim. I think there's 40 photos I put up, so there's quite a few.
Literally took a photo of a bottle of Juggernog without any reference to it being a bottle of Juggernog.
Yes, well, you know, I took photos of lots of things. But, you know, yeah, there was some nice Call of Duty things there as well.
But Juggernog.
Juggernogs.
Yes. Was that the light, I'm assuming, yes?
Never forget your roots.
Yes.
Good.
But that was a nice light. I like it. Maybe we should get that as it's Juggernog.
I want one of those lights because it's Juggernog. I don't want to smash all the other bottles on there. Just have Juggernog.
But yeah, as I said, was at Toy Fair. The one really video game thingy that I was going to mention quickly, because a lot of the stuff, the reason I was actually there was for seeing some board game stuff. There is some cool stuff coming up. Maybe I'll talk about that in the future. But the one thing I was going to talk about was a little thing I saw called E.T. E-T-E-E. And basically, yeah, I will read you the product description as provided in the leaflet I was given.
You can't read.
But yeah. E.T. is the first of its kind finger-tracking controller. Powered by TG-Zero's patented technology, E.T. allows user to control VR without gloves, camera, or other encumbering equipment. E.T. is lightweight and intuitive to use. The controller has a battery of 8 hours that enables the users hours of time to build, explore, and immerse themselves in the world of VR. But yeah, it was just a quite cool little, fingerless tracking device that kind of, well,
I think it needed your fingers.
Yeah. Well, no, how to describe it? It's got a round thing that sits in your palm and then it clips over your hand. So it just kind of slides on top of your hand before your thumb kind of thing. And it sits down and then you've got the tube kind of bit that goes down through your hand that you can then grip your fingers onto, basically.
So it's kind of like a tube that you hold.
Yeah, but you can measure how hard you're gripping with any of your fingers.
Quite hard.
And then it's got a thing where it can measure you tapping it with your thumb on top of the kind of circular point. But then it's also, on both of those points, it's also got what can be used as a replacement for a mouse. So basically, you can put your thumb down on top and then track in a circle and track up and down and do that on either thumb.
So it kind of tracks... No, because you can only hold it in one way, it can kind of interpret how you're gripping it and where the pressure is as what finger is most likely to be flexed, for example.
Yeah, and the examples they show in the leaflet that I was reading from is kind of... One of them is with the kind of your knuckles held out horizontally so that you're kind of gripping it as though it was a motorbike, and then on another one you've got it gripped, you know, holding it straight up, and that's kind of a grip as though it was a gun, basically. And it could sense your trigger finger, like, going on the trigger.
Because what's quite clever, just having a look at, because there's I managed to find the website for it. What's quite clever is that just watching, because there's a video on their website where there's a guy just holding it and demonstrating things you can do. It seems very clever. Actually, all it does is it works out knowing which fingers are in contact with it. It assumes like which ones are not, and therefore pointing is just goes, all right, you've got your thumb on it and you've got your three lower fingers on it, so your index finger's probably pointed out, for example.
Yeah.
It's quite clever. Very clever.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And it was like, oh, and literally, you know, you read about these things being intuitive and stuff, but literally, I picked them both up, and as soon as I picked them up, I was like, oh, oh, that's, yeah, that's really good. That works really nicely. And at the moment, I think it's only working with PC. I did plead to him to have a word with Sony, because I think these would be vastly superior to the Move controllers. I'm sure they've got something in mind going forward. But yeah, I think this works with HTC VR Tracker, they're saying at the moment, adaptive
rolls
HTC
off the tongue.
VR Tracker. So I guess it works with HTC. But something I'm going to look more into as well, though, because I just think it was a really good sort of solution for hand controllers in VR, where you wouldn't have to think about it too much, but I think it could be quite responsive and you could do quite a lot with it, basically.
Although the one thing I will say is that these are obviously... They're development kits at the moment. So a pair of controllers will cost you £1,500.
They look like a mixture between exercise equipment and little tiny irons.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
But
yeah.
But being really light and just sitting on your hand as well meant that you could easily like forget they're there, but you could still like get a good level of interaction with them Like, when you're wearing a VR headset, you really need something to be completely intuitive. And even after all this time, like, if it says to press a particular button on one of the Move controllers, I still get confused about which side I'm pressing and which button I'm pressing where, basically.
Now you just need to get confused about which of your fingers are which.
I have a question, and the most important question when it comes to the ET controller, because they are long, slender-looking controllers. How do you think this would fare at being a lightsaber?
Awesomely. And that's the other thing. I think it would go really well for guns and swords.
Nunchucks.
And like other weaponry and like, but that's the thing. You could actually like feel like you're gripping at both ends and stuff. And yeah, right. I do think that, well, you could have like a double-ended lightsaber and be doing both ends, like rather than
I'm just impressed that we haven't commented it vaguely looks like a love device, this thing.
It does look like a love device.
Yeah, this would... I should point out this was something I didn't get to try with
the
game.
You didn't pop it in, Tim, is what you're saying?
No, it's very much a tech demo, and I was just like seeing the responsiveness
vibrate
on the screen
of
what it was.
That's what
how
I was just
it was measuring
ask.
My fingers and all that type of stuff. But yeah, like it did seem like a really good piece of kit and something, as I said, I'll be keeping an eye out for in the future, and I hope it's something that, as I said, a friendly Sony kind of console manufacturer type things. Maybe go, oh, this is really good. Let's buy this and just use this. That's a good idea. But yeah, as I said, interesting and video game related, so I thought I'd talk about that
one. Well done, you.
Did you have a good time at Toy Fair without me this year?
Yes, I did. It was fun, I had to say. I did have a good
time. I will
day.
Try for the next year, as they seem to automatically let me in now, so that's weird. right, you've got Thronebreaker the Witcher Tales on here, but I'm going to ask that maybe we can skip this one for next week?
Yeah, well, just to say, I've had a quick go at it. It's really good, and so if you're thinking about spending, I think it was £17 to possibly pick it up, I invested that, and I'm very happy with my investment. So, very quickly, it's basically based around Gwent.
Never heard of it.
There is a kind of RPG element where you're going around and getting more cards and getting more resources to build more cards. But yeah, generally, if you like Gwent and wanted a game built around that, then they've done that pretty well. So yeah, I'm really happy with it so far.
Fair enough. Well, more about that next week.
My turn.
Yeah, you've posted Yay. Some cool stuff on the Discord call, man. So this is all about retro gaming, and I have done a little Raspberry Pi emulation station thing in the case of like a little mini Super Nintendo, but the kit you've got's even cooler. So I've been eyeing one of these up for a long while, so tell me all about it.
I will say this, that this is your fault, Dan, because you turned up at my house and went, by the way, I got you a present, and it is a tiny little Retro Pi Super Nintendo. You know, it can fit in your palm, and it is by all means like the right. Everything on this SNES case looks like it should be in the Super Nintendo. It's the right scale, buttons work on it, and everything. It's a lot better than some of the cheaper, nastier ones I've seen. So I looked at the company, Retro Flag, checked out some of their more products. They've got Mega Drives and other Super Nintendo. They've got the American version of the Super Nintendo. The Japanese version of the Super Nintendo, the American version of the Super Nintendo, and Famicom kits and stuff, and they look really cool. So I've gone out and I've made a few different ones for friends and things. They make really nice gifts if you know how to knock one up in a quick amount of time. And I've had my eye on the holy grail of the retro flag cases, which is the, I believe they released this last year. It's the GPI case.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I think it's only really a centimeter smaller than the original thing in diameter, but it's a little Game Boy. And it's so cool. Absolutely beautiful. It looks just like the Game Boy I had as a kid, only not as yellow because I lived in a smoker's household. And the battery pack's still there, and the front, the lenticular, the cover for the screen is still attached to the thing. So mine had a lot of beating up. This is a really cool thing. It takes the Pi Zero. I put a Pi Zero W in there.
But it has to be one without the GPIO pins on it.
Yes, which is easy enough to get. And a lot of people, I mean, if you buy them from Pi directly, rather than getting them on Amazon, then you're likely to get the right version. But some people do sell the kits with the Pi chipsets with a slight upmark, like £5, £3, something like that. Not a huge amount. But anyway, retro flag case. Takes the Pi Zero. I put the Pi Zero W in there, so it has Wi-Fi connectability, so I can update things through FTP rather than connecting them directly through USB and stuff, which it's a bit of a faff. And also it's got Bluetooth connections, so if you wanted, you could stand it up and then just connect an additional controller via Bluetooth. But it does have a little USB in the pack, which I really, really like, because if you know your Game Boys, it's where the clip for the battery the battery cover goes, there's a little USB right underneath it. It looks really, it's like nestled away, hidden.
Aww.
And the really cool thing as well, because the case itself, I'm going to play with this while I'm talking, so sorry if there's a clicks and things, but I can't help it.
Make your cool editing go crazy.
Yeah, I know. But if they're coming through, I do apologize. The case itself, it's literally the screen and the controller. The Raspberry Pi, the little PC motherboard thing that you're connecting to this to make this go, it's in the cartridge.
That's so cool.
With a little SD card. It's not exactly the size of a cartridge. It's like the cartridge with the side walls of a Game Boy as well connected to that. But it's such a lovely thing. And you can, if you wanted to, you could get multiples and put a different Pi Zero in each one, and then a different SD slot, because they sell the cartridges separately, so you can make up your own little labels and stuff for them and swap them out for what you want on the flights. Really, really a nice piece of kit. I made this one for a friend, and then I'm going to make one for myself as well. But it's been really fun putting the thing together.
Well, word to the wise, if you are... I know some people have objections to shopping on Amazon, which is fine. But if you are inclined to shop on Amazon, they are doing the RetroFlag GPI case with a Raspberry Pi Zero W and 32 gigs SD card. That all in a bundle. The price they're listing is £104.99, but there is a £24 voucher that is currently active, meaning you get the whole lot for £81.
Oh, that's not bad.
Which is still a lot of money.
Yeah, I can't remember which is the seller I got it from, but you can get the case with the Pi for $74.99, I think it is. Yeah. So if you go and get your, which I do actually recommend getting your SD card elsewhere, because a lot of the time these bundles contain a much cheaper card that just burns out very quickly.
Or actually isn't the capacity it advertises as being.
Yeah, that too. Which obviously less than ideal, but it is a great bit of kit. I'll put links up on in the show notes, but if you're looking to, I mean, to be honest, I don't need a RetroPie set up with all the classic games and stuff on it. You know, it's just a nice thing to have, but I like building them. They're fun to mess around with and playing around with ROMs and looking out there. And yeah, it's fun to do.
Although just legally bit, obviously you do need to make sure that you legally own original copies of any ROMs that you do load onto this.
Also, finding ROMs is very difficult now. Nintendo really don't like you getting hold of ROMs.
But generally speaking, Raspberry Pis are great little devices. I've got a Pi Zero that I'm using as an ad blocker for my home network at the moment, actually.
Which is
brilliant. It cost me like £15 to get set up, and it's brilliant. No adverts ever. It's fantastic. And I use it as a VPN, so if I'm on an unsecured network, I just can VPN into my home network. It's great.
There's so many so many little projects with Raspberry Pis that I love the look of. So yeah, I'm waiting till I move, but I've got a few things.
It's man-child Meccano, basically.
I want to make a smart mirror, Dan.
You want to make a smart mirror?
I want to make a smart mirror.
Okay.
Is that so it'll tell you you've got hair?
Exactly.
Oh, that'd be amazing if you programmed it so that it actually overlaid hair on your head. That'd be incredible.
No, it's a mirror. I mean, I'll have to see if I can find this. I might put this one in the Discord, but it's you can build a mirror and it will, at certain times of the day, it will pop up with, you know, the weather in your area. It will have the time on it and stuff, but also you can set it up to Alexa or Google Home so you can get it to play music and things as well.
Oh,
yeah. Nice little thing.
Magic mirror. Mirror, mirror on the wall.
Yes.
Who is the commonest common of all?
Anyway, we're going off on one a bit there, really. But
yeah, sorry, geeking out over this case. It's really cool. If you want to know anything about it, contact me on Discord. I'll share more pictures and stuff and let you know where to get things from.
Marvelous.
Because it is a bit of a facet. I mean, setting up these retro cases, the retro flag cases, for the majority, they're pretty easy to do. You have to run a little script for save startup and switch off and stuff. The GPI case is a lot more fiddly. There is more stuff you have to do because you basically have to make the Raspberry Pi go, okay, don't display through the HDMI anymore, do it through a USB port, and now I'm going to run everything through PuTTY. So, yeah. Fun.
But it's all good.
Yeah.
It's all good fun. Love it.
I enjoyed it.
But the only thing to note actually about it is battery life, because it actually runs off, what, three AAs, doesn't it?
Three AAs. You can get pretty decent rechargeable batteries these days. I use rechargeable batteries. Battery life's a lot longer than it used to be. The problem is when the battery life starts running down, it's not there's no kind of indication to say, hey, your batteries are dying. It's more, you're going, do you know what? The sound's getting a bit bad. The screen's getting a bit bad.
Oh, so I wonder it's like a proper retro Game Boy experience where the screens, where games started crapping out. And
that's it. You're looking at it going, what did I connect wrong? And then, yeah, you realize it's the battery. But it does come with a little USB power cable connection thing as well. So that's good.
Awesome.
Mm. And it actually supplies power to it properly, like under the other cases where they go, hey, you know, you really should plug in an actual proper power supply, not use USB. But hey.
Amazing.
Let's wrap up.
Tim, Tuesday's Tuesday. Tell me about Tuesday.
Tuesday is indeed a Tuesday. And each and every Tuesday, we host an event called the Tabletop Tuesday at the Loading Bar in Doesten.
Doesten?
Doesten.
I love Doesten.
Doesten.
That's where they got Ladding. They got a landing bar in Doesten.
But yeah, basically, each and every week we have a different feature game, and if you play that feature game, you have a chance of winning a copy of that game at the end of the evening. And this week's game is a real doozy, a game called Deep Blue.
Is this the film with the smart sharks?
No,
that's Finding Nemo.
No sharks. But it's a game by Days of Wonder, same people that make Ticket to Ride. It's a really well-made game. It's a fun game. It's kind of got a push-your-luck mechanic about diving. And one I really enjoy and can hopefully teach to people reasonably well. Come along, try the game on the evening, and you try it out, you can win a copy of the game that very evening. I had someone literally today thank me for recommending this game to them because they bought it over Christmas and really enjoyed it. So there you go. If you need more details, there are more details on the top left-hand corner of bigredbarrel.com, or you can join over the 1,850 members of our meetup group on meetup.com, search for Tabletop Tuesdays.
Lordy goodness.
Also, just while I'm mentioning it, I was ill last week, as you can probably tell. I'm still a little bit ill
good,
now.
It's good that you're not banging on about it, though, Tim.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, this that's fine. But I was just going to say, thank you very much for Elena for filling in for me at last week's Tabletop Tuesday, jumping in at the last minute and saving the day.
Well done,
and
you.
And hosting things when I was ill. So, yeah, thank you very much. And you can check out her thoughts on magic on the front page as well. That's there as well for you to peruse.
That's Deep Blue, a Tabletop Tuesday at the Loading Bar in Doesten in London.
Lovely.
On the 4th of February, 2020. Be there and kiss Tim on the face.
Oh, actually, that's a shame that Tim couldn't make it, though. because we did give instructions in last week's show, didn't we?
We wanted people to. I can't remember. I think, was it lick your face?
It was a fondling. The word fondle was involved.
Fondle was definitely there.
Yeah, lick your face again. Good callback. Good callback, Coleman.
Encourage either of those things again, especially as you know. No.
Okay.
Yeah. Wear gloves, but still stroke him in his face and gaze into his eyes.
Go to Tabletop Tuesday and shakes Tim's hand if you dare.
Yeah, and then stroke his face. And
he literally just coughed as I said that.
Yeah, stroke him. He loves being
him.
Stroked.
He's the one in the mask.
He loves it when you stroke his face and then tickle his little belly.
I won't be there. I don't want to go and infect everyone. This sounds dumb.
I mean, well or dead.
It's a bad way to run an event.
Yeah.
Right.
So we've had some people say hello via Discord, so thank you very much. We do like Discord. And John with XB's been particularly vocal, and he's
giving us questions.
Yes.
Should we save one of his for next week and do one this week?
Because you're ill, Tim, I want to do the zombie apocalypse one.
Go on then.
All right, let me set the scene for you. It's the zombie apocalypse.
Okay.
We're huddled down in the big red bunker. Did we have one?
Where's that?
Right.
Dalston.
Don't give away the location. You need to give away the location.
Is this just Tim's flat?
Give away the location of the big red bunker.
We're huddled down in Tim's flat. Breaking technology.
Right.
Okay, so the big red bunker, which isn't actually a bunker, it's on the second floor in an old council estate.
Don't dox him.
It's all right. I haven't given his address yet. So we've got to leave to get fuel and parts to keep the big red bunker running.
Gotcha.
Okay, we wander down the street. We notice a merchant of strange wares playing on his Switch in the corner.
What are you buying? What are you selling?
As payment for letting him sleep on your sofa and eating some of your camel balls rations, he offers you a selection of weapons / items to help us survive. Each of you gets to choose one weapon / item from any game to help you survive. What do you take?
Oh, I'm tempted to say shotgun, but I think I'll go with the powered up gravity gun from the end of
Half-Life?
Whichever one you want to pick. I'll go with Half-Life 2, end of that. I think that was fairly powerful at that. No, we'll go with that.
Are we taking a weapon and an item, or are we just taking a weapon / item?
One weapon / I think it's either
one
or
item.
Okay.
I think it's an either
a weapon
or.
Is a subset of an item.
Okay.
I would go for the frying pan, either from Dead Cells or Plunk Bat. Because it's really
weapons.
Satisfying to smack someone around the head with. So you've got the joy of that. And also, if you come across any tasty-looking roadkill on your travels, you just have a little fry-up right there. It's lovely.
Not sure it's the most effective weapon to have gone for, Dan,
No, I'm going more the item. It's a multi-purpose item. It's like it's the Swiss Army knife of weapons that isn't actually a knife. It's a pan.
It's the Swiss Army knife is the Swiss Army knife of weapons, basically. Yeah. So, yeah.
I tell you, I'm itching to say dubstep gum from Saints Row, but I think it would be more sensible to say I'll have the storage box from Resident Evil 2, because it doesn't matter where you use a storage box in Resident Evil 2. It appears in any storage box in Resident Evil 2. So there we go. We have transportive technology to go out and stick things in a box that will then instantly appear in the flat. But then the real answer is, no, stuff you. You're not having my camel balls as rations. They're my camel balls. No deal. I don't need a weapon or an item. My camel balls.
And he's already got camel balls. What more weapons or items does
Those
he need?
Those are both weapons and items.
Indeed.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, before Coleman starts talking about popping camel balls in a sock and swinging them around his head, Mago via Discord General, when do we all think the Series X and PS5 specs will be announced?
Dan, I think you said something about... sorry, I threw this in here because I just found it interesting. You said something about the rumblings of a PS5 event.
Yeah, so apparently in February there is a Sony PlayStation press event. Details are a bit vague, but people are wondering if that's when... I don't know, might just show another bloody logo, as far as I bloody know.
Look at the logo!
Look at the logo! Exactly.
But for all we know, that could be another game-related, you know, a game already coming on the PS4-related, rather than... I think February is a bit too early for details.
I think they're going to just give vague... aspirational numbers. The word teraflops will probably be involved, but in terms of actually getting the tech specs, in terms of this is what is inside the thing, I don't think we're going to find that out till probably, well, what would have used to be E3 season, I think, will be around the summer. And to be fair, they're still probably making last-minute adjustments to exactly what they're going to shove in, the new consoles.
Yeah, but I expect that both in what they're marketing and what they're possibly even putting in the console from Sony may be slightly reactionary.
Yes, I think Sony have had to course correct, is what I think.
I think, all honest opinion, Xbox, E3. PlayStation, slightly after E3.
Slightly after that. And I think I think that's bang on. But I think we will see Sony go, we'll let them show their hand first, and then we'll come afterwards. And I think that makes sense all round at the moment, generally. But yeah, I can't see them departing from that too much. And I think that was part of the reason why they probably decided not to bother with E3.
I reckon we're going to see, in terms of specs, it's going to be... the specs, I think, you can pretty confidently guess at. I think there's going to be... both consoles will have around 16 gig of RAM. I think there will be 500 gig and 1 terabyte flavors for the SSDs.
That's not what I want to hear, Dan. How many teraflops?
Teraflops, some.
Some teraflops.
Between yes. some all and a lot. Somewhere in there.
Sexy teraflops.
Sexy flops. Terahards is how good it's going to be, mate.
And also, I nicked this one from the general room as well. Skydark Lasto, they said, and we've already answered me and Dan, but Tim can get in on this. What was the first game you got with your own money? His was Breath of Fire 3 on the PlayStation.
Oh, see.
Which also, banger of a game.
Can I just say, it really depresses me that D20 Future Show said, oh, theme park, because I'm really old. Man, that was...
Yeah.
Jesus, I'm older than that.
Yeah.
Ugh.
My first console was a Grandstand. Come on, man.
Wow. I've never actually... I didn't... You're the only person I know who ever had one of those. That's incredible.
My granddad gave it to me.
Aww.
See, I honestly can't remember what the first, like, console game I picked up. And it's a bit muddy. The water a bit muddy because I kind of traded stuff in that I already had. I remember my stepmom being really annoyed with me for trading in the Game Boy I'd got a few years ago for, like, a Genesis. And... yeah, like that didn't go down so well.
You looked foolish when Pokemon came out.
Well, I look foolish, but just, you know, retrospectively and like going, "What? Why are you trading your Game Boy, you muppet?" Anyway, but yeah, it seemed like a good idea at the time. But I think, and this is the only way I can think to answer this question, and I can't even think of necessarily a good answer for this, other than I think I know the first arcade game I played, and that would probably be the first thing that I consciously put money to myself as a video game, basically.
Yeah. Also, can I just say, me and Coleman, all I can think super of. Quick answers.
Yeah.
You, it's like, well, I think it was a Tuesday, where it but was said, the Tuesday in July of 1985.
Trading stuff in and all that type of stuff. And I don't remember the first game
I remember it clear as day because my mum had just given me a new pair of Y fronts, and I was very excited about that. And I was so excited
And does it make a lot of difference if your parents like bought you something that you asked for versus giving pocket money and spending?
Because then I remember very because my mum gave me a jar of my favourite condiment, which was.
There's a period in your life where your parents, you know, they're the ones that buy your games for you. Your money is important. You need that for comics, and you need that for sweeties and lollipops and what have you. Soda.
Lollipops.
Bubble gum. I don't know. Toys. So when you actually putting your money down on a video game for the first time, that's got to be a special video game.
I think the first console I ever owned that my parents weren't aware of was the PlayStation 1.
There is some just totally unnecessary subterfuge in that, Tim.
Okay, so basically, Tim, N.A., Dan, what's yours?
Mine was Laser Quest.
No,
was it Laser Quest? Actually, no, it's Laser Squad.
Laser
Squad on the Amstrad CPC cassette.
Okay.
It was like XCOM before XCOM. It was great.
I remember that. Well, I remember the box art type of thing.
It's a corking game. It's a corking game, that.
Well, I remember going out, leaving the house to go and pick up my first video game, and I put an onion on my shoulder, as was the fashion at the time. And back then, we didn't have pounds and pennies. You see, we had bees. So I asked for a game. They said, "That'll be 3 bees, please." And is this Tim Story doing anything for you here? No? Okay, good. I mean,
it's a long Simpsons reference to get in there, but
I can't remember specifically what the first game was, but the first one I remember buying was Shadow of the Beast 2.
Wow.
For the Amiga 500 Plus. I remember I bought it at Novatech in Gosport, which isn't Novatech. We know Novatech now. It's a very different shop. And you could go rent games at the back for 50. You could play games at the back of the store for 50p, or you could rent games also, but then they sold games. And I remember buying that game for £2.95 of my pocket money.
Yowza.
Yeah, and it was absolute hot garbage.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the first Shadow of the Beast was kind of okay, but it was still a bit style over substance.
Never played it. Played the second one, put me off.
All I remember is people being very excited about parallax scrolling backgrounds.
Oh.
I remember Lionheart. Playing that game for a significant amount of time and never getting off the first three screens.
But can I just give a shout out to early 1980s Amstrad / Spectrum box art, because it was incredible.
It was.
It was just levels of quality that no one in their right mind would let loose these days.
You had a black background and either red, yellow, or green pixels. They had to do something, so they get the most amazing artists to do the box arts on these things.
Yeah, they are just there. There's one, if you just look for Climate on the Amstrad. It's amazing.
Good.
It's good to see they had equal opportunities employers for the box art department even back in the 80s.
Let's go.
Let's go. We've had enough. So thank you for downloading us on the device of your choosing, and for listening to us for another week. Really, really, really does mean a great deal to us, so thank you so much. If you do feel so inclined, make sure you do leave us a review on the podcast source of your choice, because it will help word get around about what we are and what we do and our ramblings and stuff.
Mm. Or failing that, tell your friends.
Yes, that. You can always go on to www.bigredbarrel.com or facebook.com/bigredbarrel or twitter.com/bigredbarrel. And on the front page of our site, you'll also find a cheeky little link to our Discord, which is where all the cool kids hang out.
Mm. Which I did test. You can just go on Discord and type Big Red Barrel as your room you're looking for. We do pop up.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, join the Discord. We're doing stuff. We got a little room on there called BRB UK -lounge, which maybe we'll just change the name of that at some point, make it a little bit easier. But we have a little specific BRB UK room. That's where we're getting all our questions and feedback and stuff in there. And also, that's where I'm starting to put things in there, like Dan's appearance on Games World.
Yeah,
recently.
Thanks for that.
So if you want to see that, it's linked in the Discord.
Cheers, mate.
Mm, that's all right.
Thanks for that.
Yeah.
Eating my dust.
Nice.
That's the gift that keeps on giving. I really wish my school never gave me that day off.
It was a Royal Rumble last Sunday, so I was up till like 4 in the morning around my mate's house watching that. And while we were waiting for it to start, I was like, by the way, I know you don't know Dan, but you've got to see this.
Cheers, mate.
That's all right.
Cheers, buddy.
Yeah. Edge came back. It was a good night.
Shall we go?
Right, let's go.
That's all right. Remember, go to the Epic Games Store and get your copy of Farming Simulator 19. Me and Coleman will be farming the farms.
Mine's already installed.
Is it?
Yeah.
Stick. I'm going to get on that as well. All right. So.
A writer.
So we're off to go farm some things and sing Wurzel songs and maybe a bit of Reef as well.
It's
who knows?
Be so fun.
A writer!
Hello!
How's your father? All right! I think Extra Life is sorted this year. We're going to do a farming simulator marathon. It's going to turn us all a bit peculiar.
What do you call it when you start grinding for XP and looking or trying to hoard gold in a video game?
Oh, are you farming? We're going to go now. So all that remains is for me to remind you that I have been Dan.
I might have been Tim.
I've been Coleman.
Yeah, you have. Thanks ever so much for listening. And until next time, dear listeners, toodle bye. Now I got a brand new conveyor, and I'll give you the key. Now let me go past the 50s, I think that you and me. Stop this gallivanting, and will you marry me?
your ears are quite welcome for the podcasting goodness that you just heard. Why not roll on over to BigRedBarrel.com for more podcasts, news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.